Maybe our next guest can kill penalties. He's already a triple threat. Maybe he'll be a quadruple threat. It's Ian McIntyre. iMac, you going to fill in on the PK?
I'm good at taking penalties. Not so good at killing them off. Hey, that could have been a Seinfeld, sort of. Anyone can take a penalty. Take. But who can kill them off?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think Travis Green is trying to figure that out right now on this Canucks team.
Well, and he's obviously made some lineup choices because of that. I mean, Zach MacEwen is now a member of the Philadelphia Flyers because the Canucks didn't think he would ever be a penalty killer for them. If he could have killed penalties, he might still be on the team because they have guys on Nick Petan. Mind you, Nick Petan's got versatile skill, so he's not only on the team to kill penalties, but he had to learn to kill penalties in the preseason. Justin Dowling basically made the team by being able to kill penalties. So it's a big question mark hanging over the team because it wasn't very good in the preseason. I think they get a little bit of a pass because there was so much experimentation. But it's a trial by fire tonight against the McDavid power play, for sure.
I have this big smile on my face, Ian, because we're back before game one, game day, and we're talking about power play, unit two, power play two. We're talking about the PK. We're talking about the 13th, 14th forward. But you know what? I love it because this is what matters. And honestly, because we have expectations this year, right, and we should have expectations, they should be a good team. These are things that matter, right? Like, they have to be able to be passable on special teams in addition to have a good 5-on-5 game. Because I do feel like they should be better at evens based on how they built their team out. The question really comes down to special teams and if they can get back to that strong power play and also have a good PK. But would you say what the strength of this team is going to end up being? Is it evens, power play, PK, goaltending? Like, what do you think the ultimate strength of this team lies?
Man, that was a long prologue to a question.
Yes, Dad, it was.
I've got to say. But you're being very gracious, because what you didn't mention is that on Saturday on television, it was Saturday. We had a discussion about JT Miller as a center or a winger. And this was because Travis had said he'd like to use, or he might use JT at wing. We'll have to see. And to that point, he had played every shift of every practice and game and scrimmage as a center. And I said to you on TV, because you were arguing, you were advocating for the winger position, I said Travis Green used to be a really good poker player, but this is a terrible bluff because JT Miller is going to be a center. The next day at practice, that's all it took for me to change things. I mentioned it to Travis, by the way, and he had a good laugh. So, yes. Details. It's all in the details. Well, I mean, you need your top players to be top players. In order, they need Pettersson and Hughes to be elite. They need Thatcher Demko to build on what was a breakthrough season last year and now do it over an 82-game season. But even if you have your top players going, so often in this league, because the margin is so fine, it is those little details at the bottom of the lineup. On special teams, on face-offs, discipline generally. So much of those little bits of trade craft end up deciding games. So, you know, I think it's completely legitimate. Sometimes we're get a little carried away arguing about who should be the 14th forward, but I think it's absolutely legitimate to obsess at least a little bit over these details and these little roles at the bottom of the lineup, because they will determine some wins and losses this year.
Ian, a couple of years ago, the Canucks had a lethal power play. You know, they lit up the Nashville Predators every time they played them. Last year, we saw what happened. It was not so great, bottom half of the league, and it looked pretty ugly at times. You expect the team to be better 5-on-5 if they're going to have success. But when it comes to that power play, do they need to be a top five power play to be successful and potentially a playoff team this year? Are they still power play dependent like they were 2 years ago?
I would say this, Randy. If it would obviously help if the power play is top five, but I don't think it has to be top five for them to make the playoffs if the penalty killing is better as well. Their special teams, to me, I don't really separate. I kind of lump them together, and that collectively, you have to be like in the top third, I would say. So you could have a 13th power play if your PK is seventh. Travis Green made a comment the other day, which I actually thought was really interesting, and sometime I would like to talk to him about it. But he said he thinks it takes longer to learn to kill penalties in this league than play the power play, which, you know, is apropos of nothing with our discussion, but other than I think sometimes, because the scoring is such an overt way, an obvious way of deciding a game, you get a power play goal in the third period, you break a tie, you win. Oh, that was simple. But the penalty killing is a huge factor as well. And the Canucks special teams, bottom line is the Canucks special teams have to be better collectively than what they were. I think the power play will be better. I'm not sure about this idea of having two balanced units. I don't really know how that's going to go. It would be nice just to have one great unit, and then you can worry about the second one. But I do think if Pettersson stays healthy, that in itself is going to be a big factor. And I know the power play wasn't great last year before he got hurt, but those first 10 to 15 games he played were so completely off form from what we had become accustomed to. And I'm not laying, you know, the blame of the power play at Pettersson's feet, but he just wasn't the player at the start of last season that he had been the previous two. If he stays healthy and gets back to being the player that we saw the first 2 years, that alone will make this power play better.
Ian McIntyre, our guest on the Dunbar Lumber text line. We may have lost Big Zach McEwen today, but at least we still get iMac. So the text box is loving their dosage of Ian McIntyre here on the People's Show. Loved your piece up at sportsnet.ca on Elias Pettersson and his secret 5 days in a basement somewhere in the greater Vancouver area. I'd love
was
to
it
see
your house, Dan?
It was not my shoebox apartment. You know, just hearing from Pettersson and his motivations coming into this year, he's definitely ready for the challenge. At least it seems that way.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he absolutely embraces this notion that the money changes things, because it's an easy answer for players in any sport to say, well, I always try my best, whether I'm being paid or not, or whether I, you know, make $10 million or $100,000. And to a large extent, you know, that is true. But the expectations, which means pressure, and environment changes when you suddenly become a $7 million a year player. And I thought it was terrific that Pettersson said, yeah, he understands that, and he's comfortable with it. And he wants to play at another level. Not only does he want to play, he thinks he needs to play at another level if he's going to make that kind of money. So I thought that was great. One thing that I took away just in my short conversation with him was just how kind of at ease and comfortable he feels. You know, he wasn't crazy about missing the first half of training camp, and there's been a certain urgency emanating from him because he and Quinn Hughes didn't have much time to get ready. But as far as kind of his confidence, I think he's confident in his wrist. He's confident in his game. I think he's just a lot happier than he seemed last year. I think it helped him a lot to get away. You know, this was a 21-year-old kid who spent, you know, a year away from home because he didn't go home to Sweden between the bubble season and the start of last season. And he didn't go home because at that time that was pre-vax and there was mandatory quarantines everywhere. And he just thought it would be better for his hockey team if he just stayed here. I'm not sure it was better for him personally, but whatever it is, he certainly seems refreshed and really confident. And like most players on that team, excited about what this team is capable of. I think that with the players that they missed in the preseason and with the way the preseason went, the Hamonic thing hanging over everything, I don't think they took the opportunity to build momentum, and certainly going 2-5 in their seven preseason games didn't help. But when you speak to the players, they're still very much excited about the new guys who are here, the depth of the team, the speed and skill, the youth, all these things. They still are excited about that. And as JT Miller said the other day, they just can't wait to get going. So we'll see tonight. This is, you know, a really tough test to have McDavid and Draisaitl right off the bat on the road. But they, you know, as I'm sure you guys have talked, this for a six-game trip at the start of the year, it sounds ridiculous to say that it's important, although I guess all the games are. But the Canucks do need to dig in here and find a way to build some momentum so that excitement that they feel right now doesn't dissipate, because there was a lot of excitement after the bubble too. Even though guys were disappointed about how free agency went and the people who left, a lot of players were still pretty excited to build on that. And all it took was those first couple of miserable weeks and that excitement was gone, and suddenly you're playing from a deficit, and that changes everything. So this is important tonight and on this road trip for them to build some momentum.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Ian, because over the past couple of years, especially on the post-game show, and by the way, looking forward to having you back on the post-game show tonight, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, at 11 o'clock when the Canucks and Oilers stopped playing. But we talked a lot about a team that at times looked fragile, right? They had a hard time when things went bad. They fell apart. So from that aspect, I really want to see a jump in maturity from this group too in that sense this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Seth. And I think you can even break it down to moments within games last season. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, you know, how did they handle a losing streak? How did they handle a big injury? These sort of big event adversity things that come along. But even within games, you know, how do they handle a bad shift? How do they handle, you know, a bad goal against, or a weak call or something? And even within games last year, you could feel them sagging. How often did, you know, one bad shift turn into, you know, 5 or 7 minutes of sustained pressure by the opposition? And I think part of that is maturity. Maybe the word I would prefer is experience, you know, to learn to cope with these things, because just as in an 82 game season, you're going to have more difficult periods than others. Certainly within games, you're going to have spells where it's just not going for you, or the opposition is just that good, so they're dictating. It's how you manage those moments. You know, I've said many times, it's easy to play when things are good. The measure of you is how do you play when things are difficult, when it's challenging. And there were a lot of challenging times within games last year that they didn't handle very well, and hopefully they'll handle them better now. I think, you know, again, if these things come along and you're ahead in the standings and you've won some games and you feel good about yourself and you're confident, I think it's a lot easier to deal with than when you're dreading another loss or how bad this is going to look or how bad it feels. So again, another reason to try to start well and just put last year behind them and prove to everyone that this isn't that team, and that season was a one-off, as a lot of guys have referenced.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Sportsnet's triple threat, Ian McIntyre. Ian, you mentioned Zach MacEwen a little bit earlier. Obviously, in this market, anytime a player is picked up off of waivers and leaves the team, it creates a discussion. And I think we can all acknowledge Zach MacEwen, you know, 5-on-5 on the penalty kill, and skating in general. It was, you know, that development didn't go to that next level that many had hoped. But team toughness, is that a concern when you lose Zach MacEwen? Is that something that the Canucks, you know, some fans are worrying about that? Is that a concern?
Well, I'm old enough to still care about those things, and I don't think you can afford, in this day and age, to carry guys who can't play simply on the off chance that you may need him to fight somebody on the other team. I do think that you still need team toughness, and that's a general term, and it doesn't just mean fighting. I think that it's something that they have to be aware of, and we'll see how these things go. You know, the first couple of weeks, first month of the season, we'll see if they look like a team that's team tough. But, I can say that, you know, Oliver Ekman-Larsson doesn't fight anybody, but he's tough. Like the way he plays, he's not deterred. He's not intimidated. There's a toughness in his game. I think Jason Dickinson is the same way. I think Connor Garland is a guy who's not dissuaded. I mean, how could he be? Because if he were, he would never have made it this far at the size that he is. So, you know, toughness can mean a lot of things. But yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about it. But in McEwen's case, and I really liked Zach, and, you know, I did a couple of stories on him, you know, in his first season that I really liked. And but he had a poor year last year, and he was pretty poor all through the year. Remember, there were times he was not in the lineup, even after they'd had a bushel of injuries and they were missing other guys and he wouldn't necessarily be playing. And he was one of the guys that I think started this camp on the bubble 3 weeks ago, and he just never rose. You know, he just kind of got left behind as some others who were also on the bubble pushed for those spots at the bottom of the roster. So I don't blame Travis Green for deciding that Zach McEwen isn't one of his 23 best players right now. You always wonder, did the organization do everything they could to try to harvest the asset, not lose him for nothing? But we know that Benning was calling everybody the last few days, and not just on Oluyulevi and Zach McEwen. There were a lot of scenarios that this team worked through where they tried to figure out what is the market if we waive this guy? What's the market if we waive that guy? And they weren't able to make a trade. I think they knew that there was some interest in McEwen and that there was this possibility, but obviously they hoped that they would get him through waivers, and they didn't. And so we'll see in time whether that toughness and size is a loss for them. It certainly feels that way, at least organizationally, even if it's not the NHL team. It just feels organizationally, having lost Gajovic and McEwen on waivers so close together, it seems to leave a bit of a void in that department in the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. IMAC, appreciate the time as always. I know you'll be focused on the Canucks, but also big one today for the Canadian men's national team. Allez les Rouges.
Yes, yes. And hopefully they seize the moment. Because it wasn't, I thought that was a lost opportunity in Kingston.
Yeah, it was. All right, IMAC, we'll talk soon. Thank you.
See you guys. Nice being on.
Always.
Look forward to 82 more games of this, 81 more games.
We got to get through the first one, so 82.
Still 82, IMAC.
All right. See you guys.